you can live out your MasterChef dreams. When you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel, connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that is thankfully well-rested. Dallas was in control last night about halfway through the second period, so I got to admit I turned it off, went to bed. Mark, nothing exciting happened after about the 10-minute mark in the second period, right?
Well, not if you're a Nils Lundqvist, but yeah, it was pretty standard fare. Stars just closed it out, right?
I mean, goodness. We're here to talk about Dallas winning, prevailing in overtime, Wyatt Johnston continuing to be Wyatt Johnston, aggressively Wyatt Johnston, I would say. And Mark, I'm going to open with a question because KT and I were arguing about this in Slack setting up tonight's podcast, because it's kind of difficult to pinpoint at what, we always kind of talk about the cliche, like, oh, so-and-so has finally arrived at the NHL level. Like, at what point did Wyatt Johnston arrive?
Well, I don't think he's there yet. He hasn't fully arrived until the national broadcast actually puts a T in his last name.
He hasn't earned the T yet.
No. He's still Dominic Roussel and the rest.
I mean, because KT obviously pointed out last night's just clutch and amazing overtime winner. It's savage. We'll get into that. But I was also thinking, like, he did it against Seattle last season. It wasn't a game winner, but it turned out to be important. So it's kind of like it's difficult to pinpoint. And it's crazy considering his age and he's only, two seasons into his NHL career. But it's actually kind of difficult to look back and pinpoint the one moment where it was like, yeah, here's the kid, because it's pretty much like all of the moments.
Yeah. Well, what I found really weird here, and I'm going to jump off into Logan Thompson's stand here. The Stars have been going after his five hole the whole time, and I thought Henrik Lundqvist on the intermission report had a real good observation about how he goes down and opens his five hole a little bit off to the side. And the Stars in game one scored a bunch of goals through the five hole exactly that way, and so I think they continue to pepper it. But God knows on that Wyatt Johnston goal, if you get the right look, how many holes did he have in him?
Oh, I know. He was.
He had a hole over the pad. He'd come off his post. He was pre-down, and I'm kind of the theory here that he's going pre-down because he knows the Stars are shooting five hole, and he knows that as he's going down, he has a hole.
So he goes down early.
Yeah, and so it's almost like, yeah, he's going to go down. So now the Stars need to make their adjustment and go shelf. And then if he doesn't start going down, they go pepper five hole where he's got a weakness. So
I mean, that makes sense. And you can kind of see in the buildup. I think they did a really good job. Congrats to the camera work and the director on the goal. And obviously the guy carrying the puck in overtime is probably a focal point. But I thought they did a really good job capturing just how well just everything about it from we've talked early in the series, right? Just I'm going to start from the beginning and work from there, right? Good plan. We talked in game one about how Vegas had a lot of joy putting the pressure on Dallas's defense in the defensive zone, kind of with the with that aggressive, heavy, you know, big bodied forecheck. And it seemed like Dallas adjusted in game one. And I think the overtime winner is a good example of that adjustment Dallas has made, because that was a clean as you like, smooth handoff. You know, there were, I think, you know, possession behind the net, pass up the wall, chip into the middle. It was, you know, three or four touches from the moment Dallas got the puck in the defensive zone until the moment that Johnston was really breaking, right? And so I think that that was a good example of an adjustment they've made. And then I loved speaking about, you know, shooting lanes and holes and all that. You could see why, you know, building the wall, as they say, right? Putting his shoulder and his thighs and, you know, blocking everything to give him leverage to get past the defense. And Mark, like you said, he was calm enough to assess, like, it was a difficult shot. It was an insane shot, elite shot. But to your point, it was very, very open. It was not a, you know, beat the goaltender shot. It was a hit my spot shot. And as long as he hits his spot, it's a goal. And I think that it was just fantastic work by the kid.
Yeah, and you make the comparison. If you go back and watch Johnston's goal last year against Seattle, that was a much tougher shot. I mean, there was a tiny little hole to go through here. And the tough thing about Johnston's shot against Vegas was, one, he had to wait it out, and it was a severe angle, but he outweighed it. And at a certain point, Thompson lost his nerve and opened up a bunch of holes for him. Yeah. And he just took advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. He did. And speaking of take advantage, Mark, Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. And talking about Wyatt Johnston, that was actually where the game started as well, right? Dallas, let's just bask in the good for a minute.
It is
rare to see an NHL team, regardless, you know, we're talking about two very good NHL teams, but just replace Vegas with anybody, it is rare to see an NHL team get dominated as thoroughly and consistently as Dallas dominated the Golden Knights coming out of the gate. Like, it just, that so rarely happens.
Yep. And again, you look at it and you say, oh, only 1-0. You got to get more out of that. And then you saw it go on into the second and Miro gets his goal. But how many odd man rushes and breakaways did the Dallas Stars have and they didn't capitalize? And you, as the game builds, you kind of get this black cloud over your head, and you know the hockey gods are pondering revenge.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the Sagan, he looked prime Sagan last night. The back check stick lift, turns it into a breakaway, can't score. Like, this series in a nutshell to me is the second Vegas goal. And this isn't a, I'm not singling out hints here, right? Because the entire team is doing it and there's luck involved and it was a good save by Thompson, all this. This isn't like a attacking Rupe comment. I more mean that this series is encapsulated in Dallas goes down on the power play. They generate a fantastic look for one of, if not their, you know, arguably one of their very best offensive players. And then, you know, less than 20 seconds later, the game is tied, right? Because consistently in this series, Dallas gets on the doorstep, can't put it in. And then not only is it a 2-on-1 going in the other way, but it's a 2-on-1 with Jack Eichel with the puck on his stick. And it's just tough, right? You can't relax, right? They're dominating, not scoring. It's just, this is a Vegas team that is going to be in games until the final whistle. And it's really, really difficult to not capitalize on examples or to not capitalize on opportunities in a series like this one.
Yeah. Well, and you kind of like what the Stars did then, because you go into the third period and the momentum is all going for the Golden Knights, and the Stars kind of locked it down and just say, we're going to take the air out of this game. And they survived the third period, and when momentum goes like that, you know, I just finished Sunday evening, just watched Nashville get smoked in 3 minutes and 50 seconds of ice time. And you take a
which
look,
is like 3 minutes and 40 seconds more than Dallas needed to score twice on Nashville. Just
true. Nashville has set a trend, but you take a look, you know, it's so easy for that momentum to carry over to the third. And if Dallas goes down 3-2 and, you know, that very easily could have happened if you allow a free flowing game at that point. Then once it's locked down, they get into the overtime and they're back to playing some somewhat dominating hockey.
Yeah. And I think it's not, I don't want to undersell it. And we talk on the show a lot about not getting too far into the psychology, right? Because we're not on the bench. It'd be very crowded, right? Very sweary and yelly. But we talk about, you know, players reacting to situations. Nashville is a great example. This is a team that at that point had played two excellent games of hockey, had absolutely nothing to show for it, had started and played half of another excellent game of hockey, and all of a sudden had absolutely nothing to show for it. And I do think that it is you have to give credit to, you know, and whatever blend of, you know, however these percentages are ascribed, but you have to give credit to the coaching, to the leadership, to the character, to the roster. Like, you have to give credit to the Dallas Stars to see Jack Eichel score. That game goes 2-2, and to not just throw up your hands and say, well, I guess this is just Logan Thompson's year, right? And yeah, we can talk about, well, they're professional athletes and they're well played, all these, but they're also human beings. And man, you get kicked in the teeth two games in a row, somebody's balling their fist up, ready to smack you around in game three, and instead you win. And I think that's a big deal.
Well, and I think this is also one of the reasons why going into the series, there were so many people who were saying, we don't want this Vegas matchup, because Vegas is going to be the team that's just not going to go away.
Yep.
And you take a look at the Stars' pedigree and the number of veterans that they have that know what it takes to get it done. And Vegas has, you know, you line them up side by side and Vegas is in the same boat. And so, you know, this series compared to the other series that are out there is really a heavyweight bout. I mean, they're just going toe to toe and banging on each other. And it's enjoyable, but it would be a lot more enjoyable if this was Vegas banging on Edmonton instead of Dallas.
Yeah, it would be. And Mark, we're going to play a fun stat game real quick. And I know that there are different sources and different people track it in different ways. And, you know, I love that the concept of a high danger chance has become mainstream enough that it's part of Razor's broadcast. It's part of, you know, Brian and Sevi in the studio. I think it's a great stat. So, but I am looking at Natural Stat Trick, my friend. And what is the, at all strengths, what is the high danger chance breakdown of Dallas's 3-2 overtime win against the Golden Knights?
Ooh, I would say maybe 25-10.
Oof. You are very close on Dallas. You are not. It is 23-4 that Natural Stat Trick scored. And I know, like I said, they talked in broadcast and the broadcast had Nashville. Good Lord. The broadcast had Vegas, I think, a little bit higher. And I tend to think that it's probably closer to like 7 or 8. Like, there were some chances, but I don't think it's more about the, you know, it's directionally accurate. Dallas had a bunch, Vegas had next to none. But, and this was really interesting, sticking with Natural Stat Trick, Mark, when you click over to the high danger goals for and goals against, what is the ratio of high danger goals for and goals against?
I mean, I'm going to have to guess maybe 1-1.
Yeah. Dallas. Yeah. That's exactly right. Right.
Yeah. The Natural Stat Trick's a little tight when it comes to high danger. They don't mean just kind of time and place, you know, weak backhand in the crease. They mean that, you know, you have a pretty good shot of scoring. Yeah.
They do. And I think, again, we talk about things that are emblematic of the series, right? It's Dallas is having to generate a very high volume of chances to get anything. And Vegas is just executing at a really high level. And you can see that, you know, a little bit of his game effects. I think the PDO in the first game was like 9.98, and then it was 0.88. So, you know, you can see it manifest in the first two games, but, you know, it's just a tough series right now, man. It's all the cards are coming up for the other guys, and Dallas is having to really just fight through it.
Yeah, but that's kind of what you want, you know. Yep. Just keep grinding away. And that's what this team knows how to do. You know, when you see, oh, we lost two at home, and it's going into Vegas, and this is a disaster. Well, no, it's not, because Dallas is an extremely good road team. They kind of like having a chip on their shoulder. They like being the guy stepping into somebody else's barn and being the one that quiets the crowd. And so Dallas in Vegas is not intimidated by the environment.
No, they're not. And I think it's really interesting to me is that you can say, I think these teams are, these games, all three of them so far, you can look at each one of these games in isolation and be completely fine with what's going on. And honestly, probably with either team, you could look at, you know, even in game three, if you're Vegas, you hate how it started. But in Vegas, you can at least point to it and say, we've got outplayed about as badly as you can get outplayed and still manage to lose in overtime, right? So you can, there's not a single one of these games that like definitively points one way or the other, which is, you know, great as a, you know, if you're neutral, but for those of us that are, you know, have a vested rooting interest in this, it's just absolutely brutal hockey because you can't relax.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, it's kind of a shame that the Stars are stuck on these strange late night games, because you throw all the primetime games out there and fine, whatever. But this has been the fun series to watch if you're just a general hockey fan, and it's on late at night and people are missing it.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's been, and honestly, I think it's been the series we all expected, right? We talked early, like each one of these games, and I honestly don't think it's going to get any better. I think that every game in this series, and yeah, game two was a 3-1 game, but it wasn't because there's an empty netter involved, right? I think every one of these games is going to be this, you know, white knuckle roller coaster that's, at this point, it's probably going to fire along roughly the same lines. And I think that we can say that in terms of the general run of play, Dallas is a little bit better top to bottom right now. However, Vegas is good enough and has a high enough high end that even though they're not going to kind of bell to bell, like they still have the ability to kind of turn. I don't want to say flip the switch is the wrong thing, because I think it implies that Vegas is like loafing or not trying elsewhere. I don't think that's it. I think though Vegas, what they have is the high end talent and the veteran awareness to know when they've got, you know, when they get a cycle going, when they have a scoring chance, when they, you know, this is a team that isn't rattled playing behind for two, you know, a period and a half, and all of a sudden Jack Eichel gets a breakaway and he's able to just execute, right? He's not going to get caught up in the fact that, oh man, we've been getting played out of the rink here. I better do something special. Oops, I've screwed it up, right? This is a team that really can take it seemingly, right? Just based on the amount of goals they've been able to generate off of the general run of play. This is a team in Vegas that seems like they're really able to push past, like take the cliche, right? Take it shift by shift. What happened the last shift is completely irrelevant. I have a chance right now, so I'm going to execute on it, right? And I think we saw, frankly, a little bit more of that from the Stars in game three. And that's, I think, part of how they won. And like, yeah, they coughed up a lead and they went from being dominant to not so much. And they managed to shut it down.
Yeah, right the ship and then come back fighting.
Yeah. And I think you can really look at, and this is, you know, indicative of how great of a player he is becoming. And, you know, look at the play that we talked about, Jack Eichel capitalizing when an opportunity shows up. Well, they gave Wyatt Johnston a little bit of clean ice and gave him a little angle on that defenseman. And he did all the things we talked about at the top of the show. And he was able to, you know, work his way around, create numerous chances, outweigh the goaltender, and then win the game. And it's the same, yeah. Like when the chance came, he took it.
And after having plenty of chances beforehand, but this was kind of a nice chance for him. It's one where he uses creativity and kind of on his own. Won the game for the team, and that's That's pretty special.
He is a very special player. He's our special little boy. He's
How about a couple other guys here? What'd you think of the lineup changes?
Well, that's where I was going next. I think it was David Castillo had a really good breakdown of, you know, this, we come not to bury Pavelski, but to praise him. And he broke down Pavelski's influence on the power play versus his influence at even strength. And I think that DeBoer went, you know, he made the lineup switch. We saw Wyatt Johnston on a line with Hintz and Robertson. We saw Jamie Benn skating with, I believe it was Duchesne and Stankoven. And we saw Tyler Seguin, Joe Pavelski, and I'm blanking on who was the third on that line, Mark?
Which one? This is Pavelski. The Seguin line? Seguin and Dadanov.
Yeah, that's right. And all the lines really seemed to work. Seguin had a throwback night and was able to use his legs in a way that created space and opportunity. Dadanov was his, I think he's getting there.
He's getting some legs back.
Yeah. But the real star of the show, like I thought from the first shift, the Johnston line was just dynamite. And he was exactly the injection of pace that I think Rupe and Jason Robertson needed in this particular series.
Yeah. And I mean, sneaky good. The fourth line I thought was incredibly good. And I think the numbers kind of balance that out. You know, Smith, I think certainly earned a spot in the next game. Yeah. And Delandria was the good Delandria, not the one that's the agitator to the point where he's taking penalties. And he was hard on the forecheck. I think he made that line work, maybe a little more speed that he brings than Fox does on the forecheck. So I was happy with that fourth line. I kind of hope that it gets a little chance to shine for another game or two.
I mean, if ever there was a game where, you know, heading into game four, if ever there was a moment when you kind of, as a Stars fan, think, well, what if we just do the same thing and let's maybe see if they can adjust. Like, a lot of times you want to stay ahead, right? You don't want to get complacent. You certainly don't want to let the other team dictate. I would say, though, as well as Dallas played in game three, this is maybe one of the times when you go into it thinking, okay, if we can bottle the first period, half of the second period in overtime and just play that way, let's do that. And let's wait for Vegas to adjust and adapt before we try and make any alterations. And I think you're right. Like the lines worked, the pace worked, everything worked. It was great.
Yeah. And I think the one thing I would say, you know, Maybe Fox sits, although he does bring some good hockey playoff experience and has a somewhat big body, so he can dish as well as take.
Well, but, and you also I think Marchman the faceoff dot, and coaches love critical faceoffs, and Dallas got smoked a little bit in game three, so maybe you look at that and say, well, he's presumably one of the guys that does that very well.
They actually outfaced off Vegas, I think, in game three. Game two was the one where
they got
smoked. But I think maybe you look at it and say, you know, if Marchman's ready, I don't see how you keep Marchman out of the lineup.
No.
And maybe you bring, you know, Duchesne was in a bit of a slump. I think he got out of that a bit in game three. You saw more of the Duchesne that you're used to seeing. And so maybe reunite the Duchesne, Seguin, and Marchment line if he's available, but then, you know, maybe roll the fourth line the way it is and maybe see what you got with Benn and Stankoven and Pavelski together, because that's one of those things where, you know, Stankoven's used to play in F1, Benn's used to play in F2, and you don't necessarily need Joe Pavelski to go mix it up. He can play a decent F3 in that line and probably be somewhat successful.
Yeah, the problem I see with that line, though, is that you know, Jamie Benn is not, you've got a non-elite defender in Jamie Benn, and you've got a true rookie in Logan Stankoven. And is that the situation that you necessarily want to drop Joe Pavelski into, given the shape this series has taken so far?
Good point.
Just thrown out there, you know. Yep. But I will say the other, you know, we talked about this. Otherwise, we saw I think Miro, you know, 2-point game, golden assist. Ever since the first bit of game one, I think Thomas Harley has been much more composed. On the balance, I think we've seen what we expected from the Dallas Stars defense. They're leaning heavily. Miro had 34 minutes, Tanev 30, 26, Harley 30, 28, Lindell 29, 22, Suter 22, 47. So you're starting to see, and then, you know, you mentioned the top, Lundqvist 2 minutes and 21 seconds. So this is a five defenseman team. And it seems to be some combination of you've got your pairs of Haskin and Harley, Tanev, Lindell, and then Suter and Haskinen, right? And you seem to kind of, that seems to be the way that it's working out, because for, you know, this coaching staff just isn't, it just demonstrably isn't going to play Nils Lundqvist.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, for the fact that if he hadn't been claimed on waivers, we'd be seeing Hanley in this, as the sixth defender at this point.
And here's, well, then let me ask you this. Assuming that Hanley would get his normal, you know, 9 to 12 minute performance, is this team in that one specific, and we can talk about the broader utilization if you want, but in just this one specific scenario, is this team better off with 2 minutes of Lundqvist and an extra, you know, 7 minutes of Miro, or with 12 minutes of Joel Hanley?
Oh, I think probably with 12 minutes of Joel Hanley. You know, at this point, though, I'd say if you're going to play five defenders, just bite into the fact you're playing five defenders and maybe roll an extra forward.
Dress an extra forward. Just say F it.
Yeah, F it. That semi-solves your Pavelski issue if you definitely want him on the power play. It gets you another forward in there that, you know, you're worried about Pavelski playing with Ben and Stankoven. Well, maybe you move Steele into that role on that line for half the shifts. It gives you some flexibility.
I mean, it would give you flexibility there. The trade-offs, though, terrify me, right? You're an injury away from having four defensemen. And I think the challenge as well, and you have to win the game you're playing today, and I get that, and it's not – but I think the risk that you run is burning out the five guys you're leaning on. Although, you know,
if you're only going to run five shifts in almost four periods for your sixth defender, is Pouliot going to be out there? I'd probably rather see Gavin Bayreuther up in that kind of role and roll him for 8 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something that needs to be dealt with, because you're in essence wasting a slot if you're going to run five shifts for Lundqvist and you have no indication that he's going to be trusted more than that.
Yeah, you get to the point when it's there is a component of like, well, what is? Yeah, you're losing out on something somewhere could be happening, and instead you're just lighting, you know, 20 minutes looking at just the way the defense is, you're lighting that time on fire, and you just don't have that option, whether it's a defensive specialist, an offensive specialist, like whatever, you know. And I think this is, you're also seeing that my personal soapbox is, this is where you're seeing the kind of some of the mistakes of the regular season come home to roost, and like a version of him that has had some game time is maybe a little bit helpful in a series where puck progression is so vital.
Yeah. And there are certain things that he does that are real advantageous. What puzzles me is, you know, four of those five shifts were first period, and the first period was so dominant. What did we see out of Lundqvist in the first period that would have subtracted from what the Stars did on the ice?
Yeah. What can you do in 2 minutes and 21 seconds in a game that you're dominating to so definitively lose the faith of your coaching staff, right?
Well, I'm pretty sure I could do it, but
no,
he's a first round draft pick with skills.
Demonstrable skills that have paid the bills, as the kids say, at various points. It's vexing, and you hope that it's not going to matter. And I think this is the flip side of this is, I think this is where some of DeBoer's man management over the course of the regular season, right? Nobody kind of got overloaded in games 1 through 82. And even now, right, like in an overtime playoff game, 34 minutes isn't bad, you know, like 20, I'd say, you know, and the thing that I'm looking at is, you know, Ryan Suter's 22:47. And in a playoff overtime game, I think he's almost 10 minutes you know, south of where the rest of the, you know, where Harley and Lindell and Tanev and Haskinen are. And I think, you know, the benefit of this is that everyone has been used well enough that it's not, you know, a crippling issue. And the benefit is that, you know, Nil was able to go out and land Tanev. So there is a solid foursome to play. But yeah, you just wonder what this group would look like with a functional sixth part.
Yeah. Well, and ultimately, I know we've been through this in playoff series in the past. There's a cumulative effect, and
yep.
And so you're using up future resources.
I wonder if the hope.
Yeah, we've seen Miro run out of gas. Yeah. Isn't that what happened in the Stanley Cup run?
It happened in the bubble, right? He was leading the playoffs and scoring until the final round. I think as well, like maybe the hope is that not the and this is, you know, baseless speculation about what their plans are, but like there isn't another team. Their teams will challenge the Stars. There's excellent teams left in the bracket. There's nobody quite like Vegas. So maybe part of the calculus here is you need to get past these guys and figure you don't want to lose round one planning for round two. And maybe even one step further. And like, even so, the thing that will get you through round two is likely different than what you're going to need to get past Vegas. So maybe it's one of those, maybe it's a situation where part of the thinking here isn't that this is what it's going to be like for the rest of the way. Who knows, maybe Hakanpaa's close, or maybe they like matchups later better, but maybe the thinking is like, well, get through Vegas, then figure it out.
Yeah. And that's, you know, if you don't get through Vegas, you don't have to worry about it. So that kind of goes without saying. It's not really lining up for the Stars the way that you would draw it up if you were in charge. You know, we have Colorado now with 3-1 up on Winnipeg, and that's not the matchup that we were necessarily hoping to come out of that series. But unique, different challenges. But let's get through Vegas first.
Got it too. So which all sets us up to Game 4 is going to be pretty big, my friend. Pretty big indeed. You're going to have a Vegas team that, frankly, is going to spend 2 days hearing about how crazy it was that they were in. It's sort of that, you know, they're going to have plenty of bulletin board material because of how well Dallas played and how thoroughly Dallas dominated early. And then you're going to have plenty of motivation late because you say, yeah, we took their best shot and it still took overtime to beat us. So you have to think that this isn't necessarily a crippling loss for the Golden Knights. But at the same time, how many times are you going to get a goaltending performance like the one they just wasted out of Logan Thompson?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think maybe the take on it is just there was talk in previous games, especially game two, where Vegas knew they were going to have to weather the storm and get through that first 10 minutes. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's kind of the focus of the Stars. It's like, you know, there's going to be a push coming out of the Golden Knights, and let's weather it and then fight back.
And I think as well, if you're the Stars, you have to really lean on this notion of it's got to count, right? You can't have another period like in games one and two where you're winning the scoring chance battle and it's still 0-0. I think the one thing that Dallas did well, they could do better, but one of the things that did well in game three and that eventually saved them is they capitalized, right? They were dominant for a period and a half and they got two goals out of it. And yeah, you'd like for them to get the, you know, three or the five or the 20 that they probably deserved as well as they were playing, but it wasn't zero. And too often this series, they've had stretches of play like the first period that have wound up 0-0 or even behind. And I think if you're the Stars, you really have to focus on it's gotta count. That those pucks you have to get them on frame. You have to get, it's just, you're not gonna pull away from Vegas. So you've got to capitalize when you get chances.
Yeah. Well, and I kind of look at it. I think the Stars are figuring out Logan Thompson. And I think the down early is maybe a mind game they can start playing. If he's going down early, you're shelving and force him to get off his feet and go down a little late, and then you're back to five hole.
Yeah.
And if he starts thinking about what he's doing, then I think that's to the Stars' advantage.
And it's going to be incumbent on Dallas. I think Pete DeBoer's biggest challenge, and hopefully the fact that it wound up as an overtime win is going to help him in this regard. But as a long suffering Stars fan, right? Like, this is a team that has kind of gotten ahead of itself in the past. And I think if you're Pete DeBoer, if you're the Dallas Stars, the biggest thing that you're doing heading into game four is, you know, emphasizing like we are still trailing in the series. This is not over. They cannot come into this game complacent thinking, oh, well, we got them.
Even when you had them, you didn't have them.
Yeah, you so, never have them. You're never gonna have them.
You never had them. They're coming at you no matter what. And so you don't have them until you're shaking hands in the line.
And even then, right? Even then, it's the Freddy Krueger thing, right? They drop him off a bridge, they stab him, they shoot him, they blow him up, they do all these things, and then it's still they're right there. They're one Jack Eichel chance away from ruining your entire vibe.
You don't think it's over till the credits come in, and then you're still not sure.
And then the post-credit scene. So we'll close out here, Mark. What is and it doesn't have to be the winner necessarily, but what is your prediction? What do you think we're going to see when we turn on Dallas Stars hockey Monday night?
I think we're going to see a big game from Roope Hintz and Jason Robertson.
Robo had 2 points in last night's game. I think that you're right. I think that this Johnston, Hintz, Robertson trio is something. It's still, you know, it's still basically Robertson, Hintz, and somebody that lives in Joe Pavelski's house. So I think they're able to capitalize on it. Something in the water, something in the cooking, you know, who knows, but it seems to be a positive environment.
Yeah, looking forward. It's going to be a great game.
I think it will be. This is the game where you hope that Dallas has the memories of, you know, Jamie Benn's unfortunate mistake. And you know, this is a game where you hope that Dallas can look at, you talk about the importance of experience and you talk about, you know, learning lessons and growing and veteran leadership. And game four to me is when all that's going to matter the most, because I think if you're the Stars, you do have positive feelings. You played a great game three. You finally got over the hump in terms of Logan Thompson. You didn't get burned on anything. It's now incumbent upon them to not regress, not take it for granted, you know, keep the pressure up, throw, you know, period one has to be just as good, if not better, than period one in game three, and then work from there.
Fully agree.
Well, thank you, Mark. As always, we'll try and be back no matter what happens after game four. KT, thank you for putting this together, doing all the hard work on the back and on relatively short notice. This has been Stargazing, presented by Bet Online. Podcast over.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.